was 2007, and my younger sister Nisa and I had spent the afternoon filming with our father's old camera. That day, Dad had brought an antique doll from an antique store on the outskirts of town. The doll was a huge rag doll. "We're filming." I stood in front of her with the doll in my arms, trying to hide the slight shiver it gave me. "This is Dalla. Dad bought it from a strange store. I think it's pretty interesting." My sister laughed and kept filming. She seemed to like the new doll. I was a little more uncomfortable, and it showed, but as the seconds passed, I was getting used to it. But suddenly, Dalla, the doll, moved her head. It wasn't a slight tremor or a weight drop. Her head slowly turned towards me, her lifeless eyes staring directly at me. It was real, so real that I felt the blood freeze in my veins. With a scream, I threw the doll to the ground. Nessa let out a shriek and her camera shook before falling. We ran into the kitchen, our hearts hammering in our ears.
"Mom! Dad!"
They both came running, worried by our screams. "The doll! It moved!" My mother frowned in disbelief as my father grabbed Nessa's phone. Together, they reviewed the video. The doll looked static, just like any other doll. Neither of them said anything for several seconds, but finally, my father murmured, "It must have been a joke, or, I don't know, maybe it's got a loose joint." They tried to calm us down, but I wasn't convinced. Neither was Nessa. Something else was going on. That night, I tried to sleep, but I couldn't get the way Dalla had looked at me out of my head. We left the doll in the dining room, as my parents had suggested, but neither of us wanted to touch it again. At 3 in the morning, I was awakened by a sound. It was soft but unmistakable. Small footsteps, as if someone was walking around the house, but not heavy enough to be an adult. I got up quietly and walked to my bedroom door. Nessa was already there, standing in the hallway, motionless. I walked over to the railing overlooking the dining room and looked down. The doll was not where we had left her. We tried to be brave like Mom and Dad told us, but when we went downstairs, the dining room chairs were in disarray, as if someone had dragged them. Dalla, the doll, was sitting in one of them, cross-legged, leaning slightly forward as if she was waiting for us. We took the doll back to the dump that same morning, unseen by Mom and Dad. We thought we were out of trouble, but in the middle of that night, the smell of something rotten woke me up. When I turned on the night lamp, I saw her. There, lying next to me, was the doll, covered in debris and dirt. I was about to move when I saw the worst. The doll's eyes blinked. Not only did they move, but they moved as if something was controlling them from within. Her head slowly turned towards me. I jumped off the bed as soon as I regained control of my body and ran to the door. I turned the handle with all my might, but when I turned to look at the bed, Dalla was no longer lying down. She was now sitting on the edge of the bed, staring at me in terror.
"Watch out!"
Nessa's voice snapped me out of my stupor. I looked up just in time to dodge a piece of the ceiling that came loose, falling where I had been. I ran for the door. Nessa was already there, and we both threw ourselves into our parents' arms in desperation. My parents finally understood that something wasn't right, though they didn't want to admit it. My father entered the room without a word, took the doll, and put it in a cardboard box, tightening the lid as if it would contain whatever was possessing it. He did not speak to us as he did all this, nor did he look at Nessa and me when he loaded the box into his car the next day. The antique store where he had bought it was about 2 hours from home. He didn't say anything about it, just drove off and didn't come back until the afternoon. I never asked what he did with the doll, and he didn't offer any details either. But at that point, I thought it was all over. 2 weeks passed without incident. Everything seemed normal. But one day, while cleaning under Nessa's bed, I found a piece of dirty fabric. It was the same type of fabric as Dalla's dress. I left it in its place and walked away, trying not to scare Nessa with what I had found. That night, the sound of childish laughter woke me up. They were as if someone was playing in the hallway. I got out of bed, thinking maybe Nessa was dreaming or playing a joke, but when I opened the door, I realized it wasn't her. She was standing at the end of the hallway, motionless, pale. That night, everything we feared finally unraveled. Dalla was in the living room, sitting in the middle of the floor, exactly where we had left her before Dad took her to the store. It wasn't possible. The doll was supposed to be out of our lives. But there she was in her dirty dress, covered in debris, her black eyes glittering as if she enjoyed our panic. My feet were unresponsive. I felt like the house was breathing with us, as if something invisible was surrounding us. No, it can't be. Suddenly, someone grabbed my arm. It was Nessa, who was trembling, but without taking her eyes off my wrist. Then it happened. The lights flickered for a second, and we heard that sound. The same light footsteps we had heard the previous night. Only this time, they were faster, closer. The sound of something small running around the house, but we couldn't see what it was. The windows were closed, the doors locked, but it felt like something was moving. Something that wasn't human. Nessa began to cry quietly, and I knew we couldn't stay there. I slowly approached the doll, and when I was only a few steps away from her, the floor creaked beneath my feet. Dalla's eyes flickered again, and her head tilted to the side as if she were trying to hear something. Before I could react, I felt the air around me shift as if someone invisible was running beside me. A whisper, a low chuckle directly in my ear. I screamed, grabbed Nessa, and we ran out of the room. We ran to safety, hiding, hugging, and crying. Then I felt Nisa's skin feel different, like a familiar feeling I had already felt. I looked down and realized that wasn't Nessa. That was the doll, again turning her head towards me. I was locked in with her. The doll moved her arm around and grabbed my face. I was completely immobilized. I started to run out of air, and the doll started to laugh nonstop. I was about to lose consciousness. And then I woke up. I was sweating on the bed, crying. Nessa came over to me, trembling. At first, I thought she was worried about me until I realized that she hadn't even realized anything had happened to me. She had woken up at the same time I did, and when she told me her dream, it was identical to mine. That was the last time we dreamed about the doll. We still don't understand why we had that dream, but I don't think it was a coincidence. That was the doll saying goodbye in a perverse and sick way, giving us one last scare. I still see the video of the doll watching herself, and I shudder. It's been a while, and I still remember it. That day, we were so happy and so innocent. I had no idea what I had in my hands.
I never liked horror stories. I was never one to believe in ghosts or spirits. My YouTube channel was about urban exploration, and that was enough for me. Walking through abandoned buildings, ruined factories, or tunnels under the cities. That gave me enough adrenaline. But James, my adventure partner and best friend, always felt like we could take it to the next level. He was looking for something more, something that would make us stand out. It was his idea to visit La Isla de las Muñecas. When we arrived in Mexico City, the idea of exploring a place full of dolls in the middle of a canal didn't seem so appealing to me. I saw it as a cheap gimmick to attract views. But for James, it was anything but. He had done his homework and researched every legend, every story surrounding that damn island. To him, this wasn't just another site. It was the place where we could make history. Something big, and, well, I went along with it. After all, our channel depended on it. People loved the macabre. The first day we arrived at the canals of Xochimilco, we were more impressed by the beauty of the place than the spooky atmosphere. There were flowers floating on the water, and everything seemed so peaceful. If I didn't know what was coming next, I might have enjoyed it. We took a trajinera, a typical boat of the area, and headed towards the island. The boatman who took us there didn't say a word during the ride, although every time we mentioned the island, his face hardened. We didn't think anything of it at the time. When we arrived, the first dolls greeted us hanging from the trees with their broken eyes and mutilated bodies. Julian Santa Anna, the man who created this whole place, had hung hundreds of them to protect himself from something only he understood. But those dolls only gave the place an air of abandonment and madness. We didn't believe the legends, of course, But there was something about the place that, though I wouldn't admit it in front of James, made me nervous. The island had an eerie silence as if it was waiting for something. James was the first to pull out the camera.
This is going to be pure gold.
I nodded, though deep down I wasn't so convinced. We started walking around the island, commenting on what we were seeing for the video. Dolls were everywhere, hanging from the trees, nailed to the walls of an old hut, some even floating in the water, already half rotten. They seemed to have been there forever, trapped in time. We passed by what looked like Julian's old house. The wooden door creaked when we opened it, and inside, there were more dolls. It was worse than I imagined. Dolls with no eyes, disfigured heads, some with spider webs covering their bodies. James couldn't have been more excited.
This is perfect.
He started taking closer shots, whispering his script for the video as I watched the dolls out of the corner of my eye. Something about their expressions was unsettling. I couldn't say what, but there was something different about them. Suddenly, one of the dolls made a sound, a laugh. It was high-pitched, like that of an old toy, but clear enough to alert us. James and I looked at each other in silence. There must be some kind of mechanism. I tried to rationalize this as much as possible, but the sound was coming from several different directions. It wasn't just one doll. It was as if all the dolls had started laughing at the same time. I walked over to one of them, the one closest to the entrance, and examined it. It had no batteries. One of them seemed to be destroyed by time. There was no way it could work. Did you hear that? James just nodded. His initial enthusiasm was gone. Something wasn't right, but we didn't know what. The laughter stopped, but the silence that replaced it was much worse. James started walking toward the back of the cabin, filming as he went. I followed him, trying to keep calm. The place was small, but the number of dolls made it look like a maze. As we passed a corner, we both froze. There was a doll standing in the center of the room. It wasn't hanging. It wasn't leaning against anything. It was just standing there with its head cocked to one side as if it was looking at us. James was also in shock. The doll had no eyes, but its head was slowly turned toward us as if it could see us. James tried to touch it, but when he reached out his hand, the doll took a step forward. Neither of us said a word. We stepped back instinctively, colliding with the bookshelf that was behind us, and fell to the floor. The sound of the crash was the only thing that broke the silence. The dolls that were on the floor now seemed to all be looking in our direction. I don't know how to explain what happened, but it was as if this place was coming to life. We have to get out of here. Now! We started walking back towards the exit, but I couldn't help but feel that something else was going on. And then we saw it. In front of us, a doll rose from the ground and began to float. The doll was rising, and its stiff little hands were moving unnaturally, but it wasn't levitating on its own. Something was lifting it. At first, we didn't understand. It was when we looked at it more closely that we could make it out. The doll was being held by a dark figure, barely visible in the gloom of the cabin. It wasn't the wind or a trick of the lights. It was the silhouette of a man. A man we recognized immediately from the photos we had researched before coming. It was Julian. James gasped as he recognized the figure. It wasn't just any shadow. Its form was tangible. It moved as if it was alive, but it wasn't a human being. Not anymore. It couldn't be. It was dead. Everyone knew that, and yet there it was, holding up that doll as it looked at us with no eyes, just a dark, defined shape. The doll began to laugh again, and we were terrified. The dolls began to move on their own, all of them. There was no way to ignore it anymore. Their laughter filled the cabin and the air seemed to get colder. We ran to the door, but it wasn't open like before. There was something blocking it as if the island itself wanted us to stay. James began banging on the door in desperation as I tried to stay calm. We knew we couldn't stay there. The dolls were getting closer. Each one of them moved their little bodies awkwardly, but steadily towards us. Julian's figure was still in the corner, unmoving, but his presence dominated everything. The dolls now surrounded us. We could smell the dust, the old plastic, the dampness that permeated the place. Their laughter was unbearable. The feeling of being trapped with something we didn't understand. It was suffocating.
The window!
We threw ourselves out the window, falling hard to the ground. I felt the pain run down my leg, but I couldn't stop. James fell next to me, groaning in pain as well. But we both knew we couldn't stay there. I looked up at the broken window, and there was Julian, watching us from above, stroking the hair of one of the dolls as if it was all a game to him. We ran without looking back. We didn't know where we were going. We just wanted to get away from that cursed place. We reached the shore, and the boatman who had taken us there was waiting for us. We didn't say a word. We just climbed into the boat, panting and bleeding. The boatman asked no questions. He knew what we had seen. We never spoke again about what happened on the island. When we returned home, James saved the camera footage, but didn't upload it. We didn't want anyone to see what we had recorded. No one would understand, and we didn't want more people to be attracted to the place. The island was a place that should be forgotten. We still have a part of the recording of that day, and I reviewed it to tell you this story. I regret having done so. It's like I went back to that place for just a few horrible seconds. When my grandmother died, I didn't think much about what was going to happen to her house. She was a lonely woman, the kind that people rarely visited. She lived in a small town in a house that seemed frozen in time. She always told me that dolls kept her company, and I, like everyone else, thought it was just one of those things old people said to make them feel less lonely. The house was full of them. Porcelain dolls. Dozens, maybe more than 100, were distributed throughout the house, with special attention in her room, where she placed them with obsessive care. When I moved out after the funeral home, there was no one else left to take care of the house. It was large and somewhat old, but it was well cared for. The dolls were part of that life as if they had been silent witnesses to my grandmother's story. Strangely, they didn't bother me. I had grown up watching them. To me, they were part of the furniture, like the pictures on the walls or the antique furniture. On my first night back in the house, I slept in my grandmother's room, surrounded by them. Although I knew many would find that uncomfortable, it didn't affect me. I didn't see anything strange about those dolls. They were simply objects, inert and fragile. I fell asleep without any problems. After a couple of days, I decided to do something for my grandmother's collection. It occurred to me that if I added a new doll, something of my taste, maybe I would feel more connected to the house. I went to an antique store in a nearby town and found an antique doll. She was small, porcelain, with brown hair and curls, and a blue dress. It didn't look like it had been cared for like my grandmother's, but I liked it. I took her away and placed her with the others. That same night, I decided to film the dolls. Something that entertained me as a kid was recording things with my camera, so I thought it would be interesting to make a video of my grandmother's collection. I filmed the whole room, focusing on each doll one by one. I was sure I could later edit it and make a little tribute. The next day, when I was reviewing the recording, I noticed something. The new doll. Something about her was wrong. At certain points in the video, her eyes were closed, and at others, they were open. And not only that, in some shots, her arms were in different positions. I checked it again and again, trying to figure out if it was a flaw in the video or a simple confusion on my part, but the images were clear. The doll had changed. I decided to check it in person. I picked it up and inspected it, looking for some kind of mechanism or sign of manipulation. But there was nothing. It was just an old porcelain doll like the others. I thought for a while about what I had seen, but I couldn't explain it. So I put it back in its place, along with the others. Although I slept that night, I couldn't stop thinking about what had happened. Something about that new doll wasn't right. It was as if it was watching me. The next morning, I noticed something even stranger. The new doll was not where I had left it. The bed where I had placed it with the other dolls was empty. I started looking for it, thinking that maybe I had moved it without even realizing it. It was then that I heard something in the living room. The television was on, although I hadn't turned it on. I went to see what was going on, and there, sitting on the couch as if watching TV, was the doll. She was positioned in a strange posture, almost human, with her head slightly tilted towards the screen. I froze for a moment. I picked it up and carried it back into the room, making sure to put it back in its place. I was scared, but also intrigued. I decided I would take a closer look at it. I started filming her with my camera whenever I could, but she never seemed to move when I filmed her. While I found the other dolls almost comforting, the new one felt different. It was as if something about her was alive. Over the next few nights, the strange events continued. They started small, windows opening when I was sure I had closed them, doors moving slightly. Once I found the bed unturned, although I didn't remember getting up in the middle of the night. One day, coming into the kitchen, I found a broken glass on the floor. There was no way it could have fallen on its own. I looked around the house but found nothing out of the ordinary. When I returned to the living room, the new doll was on the couch again, this time facing the window. With each passing day, the doll appeared in different places, sometimes in the kitchen and the bathroom, but I never saw it move. I filmed her constantly. I was kind of obsessed. But whenever there were cameras, she remained motionless. Still, the strange occurrences kept happening, and I couldn't help but think it was all related to that damn doll. I wanted to catch the doll in the act, to see her move, to understand what was going on. So I started leaving the camera recording while I slept, pointing directly at her. But every morning when I checked the recordings, there was nothing. Absolutely nothing. It was one particular night when things came to a head. I woke up screaming in pain. I felt a sharp pain in my foot as if something had hit me hard. I got up and saw my foot completely bent at an impossible angle. Near it, the hammer I used for repairs was lying on the floor, and right next to it was a doll. It wasn't the new doll. It was one of the old ones. One of the ones that had been in my grandmother's collection forever. I tried to process what had happened. I looked up, and what I saw took my breath away. All the dolls in the room were out of place, standing, lined up, looking directly at me. I struggled to my feet. The pain in my foot was excruciating. Then I saw a glare coming from the bathroom. Limping, I made my way there, and inside the bathroom, I saw the new doll, engulfed in flames. The fire was reflected in the mirror where someone had scratched the words, "No new neighbors." As I turned around, all the dolls were staring at me as if they'd been watching me the whole time. Terror came over me as I realized what had been happening. The new doll had never done anything. It was all the other dolls. It was always them, trying in one way or another to get me to pull the new doll. When I didn't, they took care of the problem on their own. I ran out of that house as fast as I could, limping, not even able to put my foot down fully. I walked away, filled with horror, never wanting to return. I was greeted at the hospital with a multiple fracture in my foot, and when they asked me what had happened, I just said it was an accident. There was no way anyone would believe the truth. It was days before I decided to go back for my things. When I returned, the house seemed quiet, The dolls were perfectly tidy, as if nothing had happened. I gathered my belongings as quickly as I could and went to live with a friend. A few months later, I sold the house. The buyer was fascinated by the doll collection, as I left them as a gift to him. I have no idea what became of them, and I'd rather not know. I only know that since then, I've stayed away from any porcelain dolls, and I don't plan to change my mind anytime soon.